And this next story sounds like it could be a country song. Three outsiders try to unseat the champions of a world-famous rodeo and win. Well, it also happens to be true. In Cheyenne, Wyoming, 1908, three cowboys from Hawaii arrive at the Frontier Days Rodeo, which was one of the biggest spectacles the U.S. had to offer at the time. What most of the spectators didn't know was that these Hawaiians came from a ranching tradition that was decades older than anything in Texas, Wyoming, or Colorado. Authors David Wolman and Julian Smith tell this story in their new book, Aloha Rodeo. David, Julian, welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So maybe the most interesting thing that we learn in this book is how cattle first come to the Hawaiian Islands and become an invasive species. David, why don't you pick it up? Start there. How did those cows get on the island?
Sure. Well, this was at the very end of the 18th century. Captain George Vancouver is sailing to the islands, and part of the British Empire's strategy worldwide was to bring gifts to these faraway lands that they were visiting, but also what they really perceived as kind of useful gifts. And one of the gifts was some longhorn cattle. The king puts a taboo on killing any of the cattle. And so they reproduce wildly and very quickly. And within a matter of like two decades, there are thousands and thousands of feral cattle running all over the island of Hawaii.
And so they become almost a little too useful and so numerous that they need to be controlled. So that is going to lead to the rise of these Hawaiian cowboys, or as you described them, paniolos. What was their job like?
Their job was basically to find the cattle, first of all, in the jungles where they were hiding out. And they would rope these cows and bulls and take them down the mountainside, often across these barren, dry lava fields down onto the beach. And then they had to get them onto the boats that were waiting offshore because there weren't really any big docks where the boats could pull up.
These cowboys drove the cows into the surf, right?
Yep, they did. They used specially trained horses. They drove the cows straight into the ocean. They weren't always so cooperative. And of course, it being Hawaii in the middle of the Pacific, every so often, a shark would cruise by and say, there's lunch, and take out a cow or two.
You did not see that in Wyoming at the time, I'm sure of that. But you did focus on one of these cowboys in particular. His name was Ikua Purdy, and he was legendary. He was like the best around. What can you tell us about him?
Ikua Purdy is a third generation cowboy in the islands. And so, you know, before he's a teenager, I mean, this guy, he's riding horses all of the time. Ranching and cattle is just part of life there. And Ikua very quickly demonstrates a kind of virtuosity when it comes to riding and roping. That sort of leads to this idea after the turn of the 20th century that maybe this guy should be sent off to Wyoming to compete with some of the cowboys on the mainland.
Okay, so let's put the pause button on Ikua Purdy for a second. We're going to get back to him and what he does in Wyoming eventually, but let's talk about Cheyenne, Wyoming, which in its own right had become something of a cattle mecca. And at one point, you write, it was one of the wealthiest cities of its size in the world.
Yeah, the story of Cheyenne is really incredible. It started out as, you know, one of the many dusty outposts along the Transcontinental Railroad. But when the great age of the cattle drive started in the 1860s, 1870s, they had all these cattle down in Texas, but they needed to fatten them up. And what Cheyenne had at that time was it was close to these huge grasslands, and they were open for the taking. And it was also connected by rail with markets back east. So it kind of had this 1-2 combination, and it had the amazing cowboys who lived there. So that combination led to this incredible stratospheric boom time in Cheyenne history. And then when the age of the cattle drives started to end, when the Wild West was being fenced off by homesteaders and barbed wire, its crash was just as fast.
Mm. And because of that, the city needed something. It was kind of desperate to get its name back on the map. And that's where the Frontier Days comes in, right?
Right. The city fathers, they saw how quickly Cheyenne had risen and crashed. And they looked around and they said, we need something else, or else this town may dry up and vanish. So they looked at other cities that had had these rodeos that were just starting to spread. Denver had some festivals, other cities in Wyoming. There's a great quote where one of the city fathers said, we don't raise anything in Cheyenne except hell. Because all these other cities had these agricultural festivals.
Yeah, there was like the potato day and the pickle day.
And they really wanted to take advantage of that hard edge.
Right. It was a really interesting time in American history. It was kind of the twilight of the Wild West. And they were conscious of that. They saw this incredible time in American history that they were so proud of and still are. But they saw it starting to fade. And so they consciously decided to preserve this heritage. And one of the ways of doing that was through rodeos. It was as much a celebration of Western culture and history as it was a demonstration of the incredible talent of these cowboys.
Well, and speaking of a PR move, somebody there had this idea that they should get the Hawaiians to come to Wyoming to make this absolutely monumental journey from the Hawaiian Islands to the Mountain West. Tell us how that happened and how they decided that Ikua Purdy should come and rope steer.
What happened is the year before the 1908 Cheyenne Frontier Days, in 1907, a Hawaiian cowboy named Eben Lowe traveled to the States and to the mainland and went to watch Cheyenne Frontier Days. And Eben is sitting in the stands watching the local talent compete. And he's thinking, essentially, my cousins could beat these guys. So Eben makes this suggestion, and he actually first invites some of the guys from Wyoming to come to Honolulu in December of 1907. And there's a great moment there because one guy goes down to compete. He leaves a blizzard in Wyoming in December, gets to Honolulu. By the way, he's looking around at rainbows. And
he's like, I'm never leaving this place.
And he never left. And he never left. So anyway, so that was how we see the seed being planted for the cowboys to go from the islands to Cheyenne in 1908.
When the Hawaiians get to Cheyenne, how are they received? Because they must have seemed like such outsiders and even foreigners.
Right. At that point, a lot of people weren't even aware that the Hawaiian Islands had been annexed by the United States roughly 10 years before. So these guys show up. They look obviously very different. Their equipment is somewhat similar, but also a little different than the local cowboys. They had leis around their cowboy hats. And so they show up in Cheyenne where, you know, in Wyoming at the time, the attitude was there's no better cowboys than Wyoming cowboys. They had won every competition almost in Frontier Days over the past 10 years that had been held. So when these guys show up, it's a mix of curiosity and patronizing almost a little bit. They said, oh, yeah, we're glad that they came, but there's no way they can win.
And it wasn't true. The Wyomingites were not the best cowboys. These guys from Hawaii won.
There's this wonderful evolution in the newspaper record covering Frontier Days competition during that summer, because at first, the news of the Hawaiians coming to town, you know, that was something to be celebrated and further affirmation that Frontier Days was the preeminent rodeo in the world. Then on day one, after the Hawaiians demonstrate their prowess, you see this shift in the sort of sports writing coverage that is like, okay, well, it's great that we welcomed them here, but now Wyoming guys, like, let's send them packing.
Right.
And, you know, we need to remind them sort of who's best, who's boss. And, of course, that's not how it transpired.
On the third day, the day of the championship, they take the prize. They take the trophy home, essentially. And then they go back to Hawaii. They're heroes at home. What did Ikua Purdy's victory mean for Hawaiians and the identity of people on the islands, which, as you say, not long before had been annexed by the United States?
Hawaii was going through an identity crisis at the time. Basically, they had been absorbed into this huge, far-flung empire, and they were wondering how they fit into the political sphere of the world. And there's a great quote in one of the papers after these guys get back home, which, by the way, they were received with these huge parties. Every time they stepped off the boat, there were hundreds, if not thousands, of people singing. They composed songs in their honor. They composed hula in their honor. There's a great quote from one of the papers that says, "We've shown the United States Hawaii is more than a hula platform in the far Pacific." And that kind of sums up what it meant for these people culturally. They had crossed an ocean and they had beaten the Americans at their own game, even though they were now part of the United States.
Well, it's a great book, Aloha Rodeo, Julian Smith and David Woolman. Thanks very much for writing it.
Thank you.
Thank you.